I'm Yin Zhang. I'll be presenting warming up storage level caches with Bonfire. This is a joint work with Mark, Gorko, Lakshmi and Sesu from NetApp, and my advisors, Angel and Ramsey Apache Duso. Let me begin my talk with a simple question. Does on-demand cache warmer still work? To answer this question, let's look at the history of memory and cache size. So traditionally, cache is maintained in main memory in a PC, which is usually less than 10 GB. So to fill this cache with data is fast and can simply be done with an on-demand fashion. Over time, RAM size has grown. And more importantly, in the last decade, a different form of cache, flash-based SSDs have become prevalent. And its size is much bigger than RAM. Nowadays, high-end flash SSD can be tens of terabytes. Together with this trend is the increased size of data. As a result, cache size is getting bigger and bigger. And these DRAM-based or flash-based caches are added in at storage servers in systems like Memcache, Amazon Elasticache, and NetApp and EMC storage servers. So now the problem is that the problem is that we have a bit bigger cache, and to fill it takes a lot of time. And let's do a simple calculation. So say we have a 1 terabyte cache, and if we read and fill it up sequentially, it will take 2.5 hours. But if we use random miles to fill it up, it will take 6 days. And moreover, with on-demand cache, the idle time in the workload will make this time even longer. So let me show you a concrete example of how long on-demand warm-up can actually take. This is one of our simulation results of a real server trace. And here we show retry rate over time in hours. And the black line represents a cache that has been running long and in a warm state. And the blue line represents a cold cache that is started from time zero and is warmed up on demand. And the orange line, orange space represents the difference between them. We can see that the first 4 hours, the on-demand cache is doing much worse than warm cache. But even after almost 1 day, it can still perform poorly. In fact, we found that on-demand cache warm-up can take hours to days. And to make it worse, big caches are now critical to both application and servers. They are the key component to meet service level agreements. They also largely reduce server I/O load. However, cache warm-up can happen very often today. So storage server can be restarted, and after restarting, it won't have any cache content and needs to be warmed. And also, a server storage can fail, and its high availability pair can take over. And the new server won't have any cache content and needs to be warmed. And finally, techniques have been proposed to add dynamic caches to offload I/O hotspots. And these newly added caches are empty too. So we see that on-demand warm-up doesn't really work anymore. So what can we do? We propose a mechanism called Bonfire. So in the storage systems, Bonfire monitors storage I/Os and logs useful information to a local logging volume. And when the new cache starts, it loads the warm-up data in bulk. So this is an overview of how we want to design Bonfire. But there still remain a bunch of questions to be answered before we can actually build it. First, what should we monitor and log? And second, where and how should we do such monitoring and logging? And finally, when the new cache starts, how can we load metadata? And we want to build a solution that is effective, efficient, and the general that is applicable to multiple cache warm-up scenarios. To meet these design challenges, we first did a systematic study of data center server traces. We found several temporal and spatial patterns of reaccesses. We then used these results to design a set of algorithms and evaluated them with simulation. And with both algorithm and trace study results, We designed, implemented, and evaluated Bonfire. We found that, as compared to the on-demand warm-up, Bonfire shortens the warm-up time, reduces more server I/O load, and also has lower read latency. And Bonfire achieves these benefits with a small overhead. So the rest of my talk will go over in the same order. So I'll first talk about our trace analysis results. We selected the MSR Cambridge trace, which is a set of 36 one-week long traces collected at the block level from MSR data centers. And we further filter out traces that are write intensive, having small working set size, and having low reaccess rates. And these traces are simply not fit for caching. And here we refer to reaccesses as both read after reads and read after writes. And after filtering, we are left with 9 traces. They are media server, print server, project directories, source control, user home directories, and web server. We formulate our trace study questions along 2 dimensions, time and space. And we study both the relative relationship between reaccesses and the absolute relationship of a reaccess and time or space. So by studying these questions, we can have a better idea of how to design algorithms and data structures. For example, by knowing what data is more likely to be reaccessed, we have better idea of what data to log and to use for warm-up. So our first question is, what is the temporal distance between a reaccess and its previous access? And to make it more clear, let me show you a simple example. This shows the I/O access of LBA according to work clock time. And say at LBA 100 is written at 12 a.m. And then it's read at 5 a.m. and 6 a.m. So both these reads are reaccesses. And the first read will have a temporal distance of 5 hours, and the second one has a temporal distance of 1 hour. We also study when do reaccess happen according to work clock time. And for space, we first ask, what is the spatial distance? This means the unique data read or written between a reaccess and its previous access. And say between 12 a.m. to 5 a.m., these are the 5 accesses, and 2 of them are to the same LBA. So the spatial distance is 4. And we also study if there's any spatial clustering. And in this case, the 5 a.m. and 6 a.m. reaccesses are more spatially clustered. And finally, we study where do the reaccesses happen in the logical address space. So I'll first go over the temporal distance results. We group temporal distance into different units of hours. And here we show amount of reaccesses over temporal distance in hours. And each series represents a different trace. And we can see that a distinct pattern happens is within an hour, or what we call hourly. Another distinct pattern of temporal distance is around 1 day, or what we call daily. So we further divide temporal distance into 3 groups, hourly, daily, and other. And here we plot the amount of reaccess belonging to these 3 groups for each trace. We found that 4 out of 9 traces are hourly dominated. And for source 1.1 and web 2, they have more than 50% of the daily reaccesses. And for the rest of them, they have more other reaccesses. So our answer to the first question is that we found 2 main reaccess patterns, hourly and daily. And further, we found that even within an hour, more recently, access blocks are more likely to be reaccessed. So now let me talk about when do reaccess happen according to work clock time. We didn't find any distinct patterns for the hourly or daily other reaccesses. So for the daily reaccesses, here we plot the amount of daily reaccesses over time in days. For the source 1.1 and web 2 trace, these are the 2 daily dominated traces. And we can see that daily reaccess happen at the same time every day. So what we suspect here is they are running regular scripts like regression tests. And now let's move on to the spatial part. and we first study spatial distance. We separate spatial distance into different groups. A darker blue represents a smaller spatial distance. And here we plot the amount of reaccesses belonging to different groups of spatial distance for each trace. So we can see that the hourly dominant trace have mostly less than 10 MB spatial distance. And the daily dominant traces has much bigger spatial distance. And for the rest of them, spatial distance vary. So our answer is that spatial distance is usually small for the hourly dominated traces, and sometimes small for the other traces too. We also study spatial clustering. So to study spatial clustering, we look at each 1 MB region that have reaccesses, and then find the percentage of data that belongs within the 1 MB region that belongs to different reaccess groups. And here we plot the average of such percentage for each trace. The green bars represent the hourly reaccesses. The orange bar represents daily reaccesses. And the other represents is blue. And so we found that daily reaccesses are more spatially clustered. This table summarizes our trace study results. And the answers to these questions help us study our cache warm-up algorithm and data structures. For example, the hourly pattern tells us that we can use recently accessed blocks for warm-up. And the daily pattern tells us that we can use the same period from previous day to warm up the current period. And since many traces have small spatial distance, the buffer to store the data between reaccesses can also be small. Now that we've learned a set of trace properties, let me explain how we use them to design our cache warm-up algorithms. But before going further, let me first define a set of metrics we use to evaluate warm-up benefits. First, we need to define what warm-up time is. So to define warm-up time, we use a new definition of hit rate convergence time. Here we show rehit rates over time. And this is a simple example. The black line represents a cache that has been running long and in a warm state. And the blue line represents a cache that is started from time zero. We compare the rehit rates of these two caches and see when they converge and stay converged until the end of the trace. And if we have a strict definition of convergence time, then it happens at time 100. But we further allow minor fluctuations. And if we do so, then we have a looser definition of convergence time at time 30. Our second metric is the server I/O load reduction. And by that, we mean the amount of I/Os going to the cache out of the total amount of I/Os during the convergence time. And we further define the improvement of server I/O load reduction by the server I/O load reduction of bound file over that of on-demand. So this value can be greater than 100%. Now let me explain our cache warm-up algorithms. So remember that in the trace study, we found two main patterns, hourly and daily. So we designed last K and first K algorithms for these patterns. And let me use a simple illustration to let you know what these algorithms are. So say I/Os flow over time. And at a certain point of time, a new cache starts. Last K looks at the last K regions before the new cache starts. And here, we define region as the granularity of monitoring and logging. And first key goes back in 24 hours and selects the first key regions accessed. We also use two other algorithms for comparison, top key and random key. Top key is a frequency-based algorithm. It can be used when we don't know any temporal patterns. And it selects the key most frequent regions from the past 24 hours. And random K selects the random K regions from the past 24 hours, and it can be used when we don't know any properties of traces. We implemented an RU cache simulator and four warm-up algorithms. Overall, we found that as compared to the on-demand cache, these algorithms improve convergence time over 114% to 100%. It also has 44 to 228 more server I/O load reduction. And we also compare across different algorithms. We found that last K works best in general, and first K works better for special case, like non-daily patterns. Now that we've learned both the trace and algorithm study results, let me explain our bonfire design. We designed bonfire to monitor and log with low overhead during normal time. And when a new cache starts, it loads warm-up data in bulk. And we also want to have an effective, efficient, and general design for multiple cache warm-up scenarios. To meet these design goals, we leverage a set of techniques. First, we use the last K algorithm, because this is the best algorithm that works from our simulation results. We also monitor IOs below the server buffer cache, because this way we won't be on the IO critical path. And we also use a performance snapshot to store actual data for a faster warm-up. Now let me explain more details about our bonfire architecture. It has two phases. The first phase is the monitoring phase. So this is a storage system with a bunch of slow data storage and a server buffer cache. And bonfire monitors below the buffer cache. It keeps an in-memory staging buffer for its own metadata and the actual data. When the metadata buffer is full, it writes the warm-up metadata to a circular log on the login volume. And here, login volume can be both SSD or hard disks. And the warm-up metadata doesn't mean the file system metadata. It is the metadata used by bonfire and can contain things like LBAs. And we call this scheme metadata only. And optionally, we can also write the actual data to a fixed location called performance snapshot. And if we do so, we call this scheme metadata plus data. And the second phase is the warm-up phase. So imagine a workload suddenly changes and your I/O load to this server increases. So one way to accommodate this situation is to add a new cache or extend the original buffer cache size. So when the new cache is started, bonfire first load the warm-up metadata from the circular log in reverse time order. And if we use the metadata plus data scheme, then bonfire reads the warm-up data from the performance snapshot sequentially. And if we use the metadata-only scheme, then bonfire will sort the metadata by LBAs and read the data from the original data volumes. And finally, it will load the warm-up data into the new cache in bulk. So now let me explain our evaluation results. We implemented bonfire as a trace replayer. We compare bonfire to the always warm cache and the on-demand warm-up. We implemented both the metadata only and the metadata plus data scheme. We replay trace using synchronous IOs without request times. And we use both synthetic workloads and the MSR Cambria traces to evaluate the benefits and overheads of bonfire. For the MSR traces, we divide each 1 week long trace into 7 1-day long subtraces. And a new cache is started at the beginning of day 6. This is also when the on-demand cache starts. Bonfire is started at the beginning of day 5 and uses day 5's content to warm up day 6. An always warm cache starts from day 1 and accumulates cache content from day 1 to day 5. Now let me first show you the retit rate results. A higher retit rate means more I/O is going to the cache and less I/O will go to server. So higher is better. And here we show retit rate over number of I/Os in millions. And the new cache started at around 0.9 million I/Os. And the part before that represents day 5. And after that represents day 6. And the black line is for the always warm cache. The blue line is for the on-demand cache, and the orange line is for Bonfire. We can see that immediately after cache starts, Bonfire's retry rate increases and matches that of the always warm cache. And afterwards, it drops below the always warm cache. This is because, if you remember, always warm cache starts from day one and accumulates cache content from day one to day five. But Bonfire only uses day five's content. And afterwards, Bonfire converges at around 2.2 million IOs. In contrast, the on-demand warm-up doesn't converge until almost near the end of the trace. Now let me show you the read latency result. A lower read latency means better application perceived performance. So lower is better. And here we show read latency in milliseconds over number of IOs. And again, black line is for always warm cache, and blue is for on-demand, and orange is for Bonfire. And we can see that after the cache starts, Bonfire's read latency drops, while the on-demand cache stays high. It has another high reading, around 3 million IOs. Now that we've learned a set of benefits Bonfire has, of course it has its own overheads. And let me explain in more details what overheads we incur. First, Bonfire needs a fixed space cost for its in-memory staging buffer. So this is a controllable value, and we choose 256 KB for the metadata buffer and 120 MB for the data buffer. And then it needs a space to store its circular log on the logging volume. And this varies from 19 to 71 MB according to different Bonfire schemes and traces. And if we choose also to write the data, then we need a space to store a performance snapshot. This varies from 9 to 36 GB. And accordingly, we need a bandwidth to write to the logging volume. And when the new cache starts, we need to load the warm-up data. And this takes 2 to 20 minutes. So these values vary between different Bonfire schemes and configurations. A good choice will give us better overheads. To summarize our evaluation results, we found that Bonfire reduces cache warm-up time by 59 to 100% over the on-demand cache warm-up. It also has 38 to 200 more server I/O load reduction than the on-demand cache warm-up. And its average read latency is 1/5 to 2/3 of the on-demand cache. It also has a small controllable overhead. To conclude, we see that on-demand warm-up doesn't work anymore because caches are getting big and can be as big as terabytes. And as a first step, we proposed a Bonfire mechanism. But of course, there are more to be done in this world. There's the problem of client-side cache warm-up. And also, if we know more about application and domain, then smarter algorithms can be designed. And finally, One difficulty we met in doing this work is lack of traces. We found that most traces are either too short or write intensive or having small working set size. So we hope that more long and big traces can be made public for our research community. Thank you, and I'm happy to take questions.
Mahesh Maheshwari from Nimble Storage. So I do agree that this work is very relevant for all the new storage systems being built with a large amount of cache. But you assume that the cache is volatile, so it needs to be warmed up again. Whereas you know, if you're using flash for cache, flash is not volatile, so it does not need to be warmed up so much. So I wonder whether you have consider that aspect.
So there are different scenarios where you need cache warm-up. So one thing is a restart. Of course, your non-volatile will take care of that. But there are other things like if your workload changes and you want to dynamically like repartitioning caches or extend your cache or add a new cache. So those cases you won't be able to do even with non-volatile memory.
That's a good point. Thanks. Hi, this is Sai Narasimurthy with Zyratex. Can you tell me a bit about the synthetic workloads that you used in your study?
So these workloads are the MSR Cambridge workloads. They, is that your question?
No, you used two things. One was the MSR traces.
Oh, the synthetic trace. Oh, they are ZIP traces. And do you want to know more about the results, or
so
you
it's
want?
ZIPs, is it?
Yes, ZIP. I can show you probably more results if
you. I'll get that from the paper. Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
Ajay Gulati, VMware, very interesting work. I was just wondering, do you think there is a fear of designing something specific to the traces you were looking at, or would Bonfire really figure out if the workload is not does not have a daily or weekly pattern, but some different pattern?
Right,
exists?
So the reason we chose the MSR Cambridge trace because it covers a different range of types of workloads, and it's also public. And that's really the only one that we can find. For that, we found these patterns, and we designed Bonfire for that. But of course, if there are more traces, more can be done. Hope that answers your question.
Hi, Sangeeta Seshadri, IBM. So nice talk. So I have a couple of questions. So one is, if you go for the performance snapshot, right, and you save a copy of the data, what happens if the data is changing underneath?
What happens what?
If the data has changed and you have a stale copy in the snapshot.
So we have thought about a consistency problem there. And we for each write, we write to the we wait for the original write to finish and then write to the performance snapshot. And
right,
then
but that
by,
means
reading back,
that,
by reading back, sorry.
So that means that every node that is actually issuing a write should have the Bonfire monitor installed on it, right?
Every node what? So can you speak
so
up?
if there is a write coming from another place that is that doesn't have the Bonfire monitor installed,
then
so if the data is accessed from multiple points,
then it will simply be a cache miss. So we can we guarantee that whatever we load into the cache is up to date and correct data, but like it can miss some data if you have different workloads. Is that what you are asking?
Okay, probably. I'll talk to you offline. And so before you load the, you know, Bonfire data into the cache,
mm-hmm.
do you sample your workload to see if it is the same workload and if the whatever monitor you have in, because, so if a completely different workload were to play after you finished monitoring it, then?
Right, that can happen. And the worst case, it will fall back to the on-demand cache. This is a, we study the trace for a long period, and hopefully the pattern stays.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, this is Mark Comment for your advisors. Your guys' logo is a ripoff of the GameCube logo, and somebody mentioned that last year. That's probably poor form.
Oh, sorry, I completely didn't understand that question.
Thank you, Speaker.
Thank you.